Well, it's hard to believe we're already into November. I'm Bill Hayes, along with Don Landry, and pretty soon, you know, we'll be looking back at the year's biggest stories. But not yet, although some of the things we'll get into today might just be a part of that conversation. We've got anniversaries, allegations, affirmations, and, God help us, potential leaders of nations, all part of another edition of The Gist of It.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture, it's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes.
An interesting night of Halloweening on my street Monday night. First of all, I answered the door dressed as Rafi Torres. You know what? Half the kids thought I was racist. Half the kids told the other half to lighten up, for crying out loud. I did have a notion to dress up as Rafi Torres dressed up as Jay-Z, but I thought that might make me a double racist or racist squared. I wasn't sure which. One young fellow in a suit and tie with a big button that said Mr. Mayor ambled up our stairs and yelled, shell out, the bitches are out. Then there was the young lady dressed up as Kim Kardashian. This was odd. I think she stuck two throw pillows in the back of her pants to complete the costume, by the way. Anyway, I tossed a chocolate bar in her bag. She looked at me with soulful eyes and told me that made her the happiest girl in the world. And then she left. She got about halfway down the walk, turned, slowly came back, reached into the bag, took out the chocolate bar, gave it back to me and said, I'm sorry, this just isn't working for me anymore. So happy Halloween to Rafi, the mayor, and Kim. I'm not saying I scooped more brain matter out of our pumpkin than the three of you have combined, but it's there in the composter if you need it.
You know what? I want a Kardashian. I really do.
For what just purpose?
A couple of months. You know, sell the wedding rights. You know, make a few million. See you later. Now, while we're on that subject, do you believe that this was all a hoax?
I got to talk to Chris Humphreys about it, I guess, because he's playing it to the hilt then.
Oh, sure.
Because his latest missive, I guess, was, I'm crushed by this. I'll do whatever it takes to make it work. I mean, I don't know if he's...
Do you get the sense he's a Mensa member? I don't. And frankly, I can't believe the amount of money that these people are making. I mean, was it $17 million they're talking about?
Something like that, yeah.
What?
Made-for-TV event, profited highly. People are feeling burned by this. A lot of people are feeling burned. Could Kim Kardashian have actually, and her management team, who've played her and the family brilliantly so far, I think anyway, have built an empire out of what? I mean...
Absolutely what?
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't, even for a second.
So if people start to turn on them a little bit, you know, and her... And not quite, not care quite so much about what every little move she makes is, and maybe it'll crumble for her. I mean, the good news is, I guess, you know, as long as she's got decent management and has been smart about her money.
Oh, she's got decent management.
Yeah, then she'll have lots of it in the bank. But who knows what happens? I mean, if she gets married in another year to Reggie Bush,
that's only worth about $8 million. Reggie's tainted.
Yeah, wild. I can't say that I'm all that surprised by it. What do I really know about these two people? I guess not all that much. Do I care? I haven't followed. Once in a while, I'll see a salacious headline about Kim Kardashian. I'll read it.
Right.
But I will read a salacious headline about anybody. Just check the story out and see what it's about. So in my gut, I go, I don't think... I can't say I don't know her, but it seems phony.
Doesn't it seem weird to you, though, that we're in an age now where all of the Kardashians, as well as Paris Hilton and God knows how many others, are really just famous for being famous? I mean, what does that tell us about our society?
Well, and again, is that worm going to turn? Are we going to get back to a golden age where you need to do something, accomplish something, be talented in order to gain some fame? I don't think we're ever really going back, but maybe the pendulum swings a little bit towards people with talent rather than just people who will put a sex tape online and then just, you know, give you an inside glimpse to the reality of their life, which isn't real at all. Of course, everything is somewhat scripted. Situations are put in place. It's not reality TV at all, is it? It's funhouse mirror reality TV and then competition TV, which the other ones are game shows, basically.
If it was that simple, I'll tell you, I'll have a sex tape up by midnight. Don't look at it, please.
Why would you? Why would you even? I want to talk about Rafi Torres too before we leave the segment. Mm-hmm. All right, and see what you thought of that. I find myself of two minds here. First of all, I'm glad that Rafi didn't do it a la Ted Danson and Whoopi Goldberg. It wasn't. Shoe polish and white lips. I mean, it looked like he was trying to look like Jay-Z, and his girlfriend's trying to look like Beyonce. So I don't think it was racist, but either you're stupid to think no one will care about this attempt, or you just don't care, or you're, again, I'll use your phrase, a Mensa member who decides they want to move the conversation on race a little bit again. I don't think he is that based on what I've seen. His decision-making on the ice doesn't lead me to believe that he is that
genius. No, there's not a lot of depth. I really do think it was a simple matter of being naive, thinking it'd be, hey, what a cool idea. I'll be Jay-Z, you be Beyonce. And it exploded in his face. I don't think for a minute he thought that was going to be the case, because I think he's the type of person, I only guess this because most NHL players are like this, if he knew that it was going to be like that, he wouldn't have done it. Yeah. He just thought he was going to a party. Hey, look, this is a neat costume. And frankly, I think when we read more into this, I mean, I've heard people offended. It's this, it's that. Look, it's Halloween. All he was doing was wearing a costume. Freaks, jocks, and nerds.
More Halloweening?
Yeah, well, no. I was seeing them all this past weekend, and it wasn't at a Halloween party, strange to say. It was the 75th anniversary of my high school, Lawrence Park Collegiate, and to celebrate, they threw a big party. Now, I do keep in touch with a few people I went to high school with, but it's the others I was curious about. How did everyone's lives turn out? Where did they go? What were their experiences? I know there are people who avoid these events like the plague, who only want to live in the present, and that's great, but I think it's kind of fun. And it was. Old students came from as far away as California, BC, the Maritimes. One couldn't make it, but sent a message from Dubai.
Wow.
Afterwards, a bunch of us retreated to what was our local watering hole. It's considerably more upscale now. And more great stories were told about how great we were, and maybe in some cases still are. It's funny to me how important these people were to me at one time, and how, though it was nice to spend time with them this weekend, they don't seem important to me at all now. It's a perspective I wish I had at the time. had at the time.
Yeah. Now, tell me, this message from Dubai, did the guy send it actually carved into a gold bar? Because if he didn't, then he's really not making it in Dubai. He's just there.
I don't know what the I don't even know what the message was. I just heard that it had come, but it was it was kind of funny. It's one of the things about the high school years for all of us is we're trying to figure out where we belong, how we fit in, all that kind of thing. And so these people, they're important to us at that time. But when you look back, there you go. Geez, you ended up spending 25 years as a teacher in the Annapolis Valley?
Oh, don't judge, Bill, though. Don't judge.
I'm just saying. No, it's great. Hey, that's wonderful, because, if you're happy doing it, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
My point is that we were thinking, bigger things then.
I know. We all were, but I mean, I don't know what I was saying. To tell you the truth, if I really connect with my high school days, I really didn't have much of a direction at all. I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do. That's why I went to... Younger listeners, this podcast will go, what? Grade 13. I did the extra year because I really wasn't sure which way I wanted to go. And then, frankly, it came right down to getting accepted to U of T for poli sci and Humber College for radio and thinking, I'm done writing essays. Having a microphone seems like fun. And it just happened to turn into a career. So, I mean, I don't remember being in touch with any big dreams at all in high school. No,
my dream was to make it to the weekend.
How good a seat can I get for the Pat Benatar concert at Maple Leaf Gardens? Those were the big dreams for me. Lining up for a day and a half to get WHO seats at Exhibition Stadium. Those were my big dreams. That was it for me.
No, it's true. But I just think it was kind of fun going back. The other thing, by the way, that was really odd about it was I passed that school every day. I lived just a few blocks from it. On the outside, it's always looked the same, as most schools do.
Yeah.
I was stunned how, on the inside, it looked the same. It was very weird. And the strangest thing that happened to me was I had one teacher who, remember, this is almost 40 years ago that I was there. I go up and say, hey, Peter, how are you? Bill Hayes. He said, oh, Bill Hayes, second period after lunch, you were third in the row on the left. And Well, he has to have an incredible memory because I wasn't there that often, you know? But and I had to believe him. Sure, that's where I was. He could have made that whole thing up. But it's pretty impressive how a teacher's mind works and how they actually do remember you as a student.
Yeah, I missed the 40th anniversary of my alma mater last spring. I had planned to go and planned to be 80s. I was going to get, you know, the Tom Petty feathered hair kind of wig, because actually I had the hair to do that and went on Halloween as Tom Petty once. You know, some acid wash jeans or maybe some painter pants and an Adidas bag. Now, that's my era. For you, did you go in throwback
costume
garb, and what would that have been?
Oh, well, I would have had a lot longer
knickers
hair, and I would have had more of it, you know. I would have been
well, I would have ridden a horse or taken a taken the milk wagon to school, no, or walked to a school uphill and then back home also uphill.
Yeah, not good. Not good at all. I think I did wear jeans, though, and that's about as close as I could have. So, you know.
I think you're wearing jeans now.
I am. I pretty much wear jeans every day.
It's Bill Hayes and Don Landry, and you're getting the gist of it.
Don, I was mentioning the 75th anniversary of Lawrence Park Collegiate Institute in Toronto. It's also the 75th anniversary today, actually, of the start of the CBC. And, boy, over the years, it's done some great stuff. I heard some great radio on the weekend, some reports from correspondents they had during the war.
Yeah.
Matthew Halton was one, and just some great times at the CBC. And
it's David Halton's dad, right?
Yes, absolutely. And as if I'm not mistaken, there's a third Halton.
I think there is two.
Yeah.
I think three generations.
And the thing is that, you know, it's so much a part of our heritage, and yet it's at a time right now where it's under attack. There's a very real possibility that by the time the Harper government is done, the CBC might not be at all like what it is today.
Probably not. There's some good in there and there's some bad. I would never excuse any corporation from a look, another look at how it does things, how it spends money. Where can we find, here's the City Hall word, efficiencies?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there is too much money going to the CBC, but I don't think it should be cut to zero, and I'm hearing too many people say that. Knock it off. I hear enough of that. Look, Sun TV wouldn't even exist if not for the CBC, because it seems like every time I tune into Sun TV, and I do once in a while, it's just them harping about the CBC.
Yeah.
But look, is there too much money going there? Maybe. Could they cut it back? Sure, everybody could. But I love the CBC. I always have, partly because I'm a staunch Canadian traditionalist. I mean, it broke my heart when Eaton's went away.
Yeah,
when
or
the
Simpsons.
Bay got sold, and Simpson. When the Bay got sold, and there was the chance that it was that was almost grounds for suicide for me. I love Canadian traditions and institutions, so I want this one to stay. And I think this one has been valuable in a lot of ways.
Oh, more ways than you can think of.
When it comes to news and current affairs, when it comes to
culture
back
in general.
Back in the day, reaching the far outposts of Canada, and maybe that has changed at this point in time. But that doesn't mean it should be dispensed with. It just means it needs to change and become something a little bit different, as we all do, and every other medium has to too. So look at CBC stays simply because they gave me Mr. Dress-Up as a kid, okay? I can forgive the CBC for hanging in with Lally Cadeau, because they also gave us Hockey Night in Canada and the Rick Mercer Report.
Lally Cadeau, boy, that's a reference I haven't heard in a
long
time.
I like Lally.
Time. Yeah, well.
Bad show, though.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right?
The thing with the CBC to me is that we keep getting stuck on what it costs. I think you got to start thinking the cost if we don't spend this. The cost would be, to me, enormous. Frankly, private broadcasting is not going to cover or get into anywhere near the things that the CBC does as part of its mandate. Now, you can argue that maybe it's not necessary, maybe it's not something that we really need. I would argue it's something that's a big part, as you said, of the Canadian culture. I think what we should do, seriously, have a look at what they do with the BBC in England. Now, the BBC, in my mind, is the best broadcasting company in the world for two reasons. One is they're not afraid to get into anything. They, unlike the CBC, has people on both sides of the spectrum. You know, if you have a political point of view, you can be right or you can be left, and you'll be represented on the BBC. What they have there, though, is a licensing fee that everyone pays. And that goes to sustain the BBC. If we had something like that here for the CBC, I think it's great. I think it's a wonderful thing, and I think we wouldn't get an awful lot of people suggesting that, you know what, we don't need this. I tell you, we'll find out as soon as we lose it how much we needed it.
I enjoyed King of Kensington. I believe it was underrated, certainly in comparison with the Trouble with Tracy. You know, that's gold, Jerry.
Yeah, true.
Gold.
And Fiona Reid, by the way.
Fiona Reid.
Lawrence Park Collegiate.
Oh!
Absolutely.
I hope you said hello to her over the weekend.
She was great
as Kathy King. There I was Friday night watching Friday Night Football, as I often do. And mm-hmm. the Argos were playing the Blue Bombers. And near the end of the game, in the fourth quarter, Johnny Sears, who's a backup linebacker, defensive back kind of guy, but happened to be in the game for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, came in, and Stephen Giles, the quarterback for the Argos, slides feet first. Sears gets him on the noggin, knocks him out of the game. The CFL suspended Sears, surprisingly to me, for one game. Surprisingly because I thought he'd be fined, but with the Bombers having a big game coming up, Mark Cohan might not have the gumption to sit him down for a game.
Right.
Maybe part of the reason is Sears is not a key player for the Blue Bombers. Would this have played out differently? Maybe. I don't know. But I think Mark Cohan made the right move there. It's good to suspend him for this, even if Johnny Sears was humble about it. And I think he reacted well to it as well, even if it was a mistake more than an intent to injure.
Oh, it looked pretty bad, though.
It did.
It was headhunting.
Do you think so?
I thought so, yeah.
I wonder if it was like the Moore hit on Marcus Naslund. To this day, I swear to you that I think Moore hits him on the shoulder if Naslund isn't going, oh, the puck, I'll reach out and try to get it. And it flattened him down a little bit. And I think Giles slid right. If you watch it at full speed, it's just so close. I mean, I'll give Johnny Sears the benefit of the doubt that he really didn't want to hit him in the head, but as he was going down to get him lower, then Giles slid. If he does it again, then you know you kick him out of the league. But as I said, I think he reacted properly, and I'm not so sure that he intended to hit him in the head. But he did, and
right.
And you need to get guys thinking about that as quarterbacks are running the ball in either league. So it's a good decision, I think.
Well, the whole thing is we're becoming much more aware of just how unknown head injuries are, or what we don't know about head injuries, and how important they are. Giles is complaining of headaches, so far as I know.
Yeah,
he still is.
He's not practiced at all this week so far.
And may not play in the season finale. And,
probably
you know, but the thing is, to me, that was one of those hits where I think he could have held up. That was what he should have done. And,
Yeah. You
know, that's the idea behind the quarterback sliding rule. There's no need for him to do anything like that unless he misses completely and then it's deliberately missing, and he didn't do that. So I think he got what he deserved.
See an irony in this, in a way? It just struck me now. If Giles goes head first, he probably gets hit on the arse or on the hip or
right.
something. He probably
and then it's fine.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And the sliding feet first is to protect quarterbacks from shots, especially to the head. But
right.
if he goes head first, he probably doesn't suffer this injury. That's odd.
No, it is. But the whole idea behind that rule is to protect quarterbacks. I mean,
right.
you can argue, and I think there's probably a legitimate argument that we're going too far to protect quarterbacks, although they are the stars in most leagues, the CFL no exception, and you do have to take care of your best players. In that instance, I just thought that Giles should have been protected more.
Yeah.
And I do think that there was something to giving Sears the one game. I also find it kind of interesting that your take on Cohan, Mark Cohan stepping up and giving him a game, because to me, that was pretty much a given.
Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, I think the questions would have been really loud and really long had he not. That was more than a fine, in my opinion.
I like harsh punishments. I think David Branch is the best at it. I like that the NHL is going harder at it, so I'm glad Cohan is. I like punishment. So I'm looking forward to that sex tape you were talking about.
Thank you. Well, yeah. The handcuffs. well, here's the thing, though, about punishments. And I think it's a part of sports that we've all come to believe, and I'm not so sure it's necessarily true. And that is, if you start suspending guys, what you're really doing is taking money out of their pockets. They don't get to play, but they also don't get paid. The message will get through. I'm not so sure that's always the case. I mean, this is something that hit, that rule with the sliding quarterback, what is that, 10, 15, 20 years old?
Oh, is it that old?
Well, I know it's been quite a while.
I'll give you 10, sure.
Okay. It certainly didn't make any difference to Sears. No. I just think that sometimes we give these guys too much credit. The head hits, a lot of times they're not deliberate. A lot of times, in a game like hockey, especially where it's so fast, I don't think you're ever going to be able to take it completely out of the game, but on the hit like that, you got to.
What about the answers on Twitter? This is one of our favorite hobby horses. Mm-hmm. So almost immediately, Twitter lights up with people having opinions, and two of them are injured offensive linemen for the Toronto Argonauts, right. Taylor Robertson and Rob Murphy, who've been fined for their tweets, which I know you're looking at them right now. Yeah. I don't have them in front of me, but do you find that there's anything untoward in here that's finable, that should have raised the ire of the league?
The idea is that Murphy's, and both of them actually, were threatening. And I'll read you exactly what it was that Murphy's dispatch said. Number zero is lucky I'm not in the province of Manitoba tonight. They would need the jaws of life to pry me off him. I have a good memory. The implication being next time we play, boom, boom, boom. And I get that.
Sure.
You know, on the other hand, let's not kid ourselves. The next time these two teams play, that will put bums in the seats.
Oh, absolutely. In some ways, it's too bad they didn't have a home at home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would have helped the Argos with some attendance problems that they've had at the Dome so far this season. But I understand, the anger they felt. A lot of people did. I did.
Sure. I more so because they're not playing.
Right. But Jason Pottinger, a linebacker, came off the sidelines. He was so incensed by this, and he got tossed, rightfully so. But still, in the grand scheme of things, as mm-hmm. a team guy, he did the right thing.
Absolutely.
But again, you should be careful. It's a lesson for everyone. And we've talked about it before. Thought comes into your head. Boom, I'm going to tweet it.
Yeah.
Give it a few seconds.
Yeah.
Just cool it out a little bit. And if you're Rob Murphy or Taylor Robertson, yeah, I understand you're angry, but you probably should have an expectation based on the history of Twitter with sports teams that this might not go over well and you could be lighter in the wallet. It's just a shame, Bill, that we can't find everybody who tweets things that are untoward or problematic. Oh. I mean, there's the CBC funding problem solved right there. Every idiotic tweet, we take a dollar from you. CBC not only survives, flourishes.
This is The Gist of It.
So the World Series ended last week. St. Louis Cardinals come back. I can't believe
so
how many
right
times.
So we're right on top of this. Oh, yeah.
Well, that Game 6 was maybe the all-time greatest single game to watch in the World Series that I can recall.
No, it was the sloppiest, worst, most awful game, Bill.
Oh, no. From the point of view of drama, you couldn't find more drama than in that game.
Loved that game.
It was fabulous.
What I was doing, it was just being facetious and playing the other side. I heard a lot of this mm-hmm. and saw a lot of it on Twitter. People were, baseball enthusiasts or purists, I guess, were decrying the mistakes and this and that.
Get over yourself.
But I like mistakes in sports
sure.
because they lead to interesting scenarios. And that one was filled with not just mistakes, but interesting scenarios. Not all of them come out of mistakes, but this one had a lot of mistakes and made for interesting scenarios. And just because a team builds a two-run lead and can't keep it, that doesn't make it bad baseball.
No.
You just easily say it's great baseball on the Cardinals' part. It was heroic moment within baseball terms after heroic moment.
Well, the strategy, you could question Ron Washington. Why didn't he put someone else into right field? Nelson Cruz has that ball. He obviously doesn't, but if he's somebody else, he might.
So
there were so many questions. But the fact of the matter is that watching that game, to me, was the most exciting game I've seen that I can recall.
Yeah.
And actually, when you go back to the last night of the season, I know we talked about this before, but with all those different scenarios playing out, that's how the Cardinals even got into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Really good finish to the season anyway for Major League Baseball. And to top it all off, after 33 years, Tony La Russa decides to retire. Now, this is what I want to ask you.
On a high, nice.
Is he the greatest manager that you can recall in those 33 years? Is anyone better?
Yes, he is. Ask him.
It's true. But in your opinion?
Let me think about this. I think Bobby Cox has been a damn good manager,
sure
too.
Sure has.
And Joe Torre.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Torre, won more when it counted, too, mm-hmm. correct? So those are guys that I might, in fact, put ahead of Tony La Russa. I appreciated La Russa earlier in his career when he was with Oakland. And even here's something that I appreciated from him. It didn't work. Remember, I can't remember exactly when it was, but he had these great starters and decided, I'm going to try and look at pitching differently. And just, he would play every starter in every game.
Yeah, that's right.
And he just tried it, and it didn't work. And he, I think his reputation took a big hit at that point. I just thought, no, it was an interesting thing to try, and he was smart enough to say, this just actually isn't working out, so let's go back to what's traditional. I don't mind his out-of-the-box thinking, but I think you could argue that he should have won more championships. Bobby Cox maybe should have won more championships, but and based on that, maybe Joe Torre's the guy.
But the thing with that is, they all got there. I mean, I'm a great believer, and I believe this is one of the things that came out. I think it's in Moneyball. In the original book where Billy Beane said, look, the idea is you get into the playoffs and then anything can happen. But as a general manager, the idea is to get the team into the playoffs. And then, you know, and in all three of those cases, both – and you know what? I'll throw Terry Francona in there too, because I think he's done a hell of a job. In all three of those cases, you have – or all four of those cases, you have managers who did exceptionally well getting their teams there. It's such an important part of it. And certainly we here in Toronto know that. It's been 20 years. So I'll give them all credit. La Russa may be the best, but it's an interesting discussion. I'm going to give it to Torre, like you, because of the results. But on the other hand, he had a much bigger budget.
I can hardly wait to see what Mark McGwire does, if and when. I mean, it's probably a win, you know. But
yeah, I'm not saying it's an if.
Game six again. I mean, you talk about that hit the right field. I mean, and it's over. They're down to the last strike. I had these visions of George W. Bush grabbing that Mission Accomplished banner out and putting it over his garage.
True.
And then you know, having to take it back down a few minutes later.
Isn't funny how life imitates life?
Repeats itself.
Ain't that the truth?
When I watch anything related to the Republican Party in the United States these days, Bill, I feel like Tom Hanks in The Burbs. Are you familiar with that movie?
I saw it a long time ago.
It's like I'm living next to the Klopex. It's the strangest, weirdest, frightening things are happening, and I'm not quite sure what to make of them. I just know I'm afraid. Please tell me Herman Cain can't. Well, I already know it. Herman Cain can't be president. Herman Cain cannot be president of the United States. Can he be the Republican nominee?
Wow.
Big fight here. The hard right Tea Partiers, or as Bill Maher calls them all the time, the tea baggers, they are going to try and win the day here. And if they win the day, I think they're actually ultimately winning the day for the Democrats, aren't they?
Well, I would think. Firstly, Herman Cain, to have any chance of winning, and I frankly think that there's no way, he has to A, shut up, and B, disappear. Because every time he opens his yap, more questions come out. You know, it's unbelievable, really. You know, he's caught up now in these allegations of sexual misconduct. He's starting to remember things.
Right.
Which is always good, you know. I would think, now, call me strange, but if I were running for office, and I'm going to keep the bar low, just say something like alderman. And I had something like that I had in my past history. I probably would think, you know, this may not be a good idea. Because if this comes out, I'm not going to look good. When you do this on a national scale, you have cojones that are probably bigger than South America.
Let me say this to you. Does this not warm the cockles of your heart? Does this not get you excited? I know it would get Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, Bill Maher and those of their ilk excited. Cain Trump 2012. Does that not get you excited?
Oh, no.
I mean, Cain anybody, really. But
seriously, for a moment, and it's difficult to be serious with this group of wackos that are running for the Republican nomination. How nuts are people down south? I mean, quite seriously, Herman Cain, Michelle Bachmann. When Michelle Bachmann, when she first came on the national political scene several years ago after her first election, she was probably the most crazed individual on the planet. Now, she's actually starting to look like she's middle of the road.
Well,
that's incredible.
I wanted to ask you that. I mean, how crazy, how off the charts, off kilter, just flat out not ready to be a president do you have to be to make Michelle Bachmann look like this, the stable, sane alternative? I'll bring another name up. Sarah Palin all of a sudden
looks normal.
Looks more, way more presidential.
Yeah.
Brings me to that point. Don't you still have to be a little presidential to be the president of the United States? Can Americans buy into a guy who is not only not presidential, obviously, but is proud of that and has done interviews where he's made fun of the names of foreign countries?
Becky, 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 Becky stand?
Pretend I don't know anything about that. Why? Yes. I'm just a normal guy like you. Look, normal guys and gals in the U.S.,
not
if you think, do you think you can be president?
Mm-mm.
Because if you don't really believe you'd be up for that job, Herman Cain is telling you he's not up for that job. And he clearly is not up
for
that job.
Good God, no.
I wouldn't let Herman Cain run a chain of pizza stores, to tell you the truth, which he did successfully. I'll have to give him credit for that. But, I mean, if you had Cain and Trump in the White House, I mean, it would be turned into a casino slash pizza parlor, which might be kind of fun. And there's how you deal with America's debt.
Well, here's a question for you. When did it become the thing that a businessman should run a country? Where does it say that if a guy can run a business, he can run a country? They're two very different things. Firstly, so far as I know, a country is not in it for the profit. You know, sometimes countries have to step, governments have to step up and give helping hands to people who need it. That's just reality.
Boy, you sound like
companies
a socialist.
Don't have to do.
Well, sound like a socialist, Bill. You say, and that's of course a bad word. No, and you are of course correct that there's more to it than just bottom line here. There should be a certain element of that in anything that you're running with finances involved.
But specifically,
there are different goals.
Absolutely,
there are absolutely different goals, but. Donald Trump's mad at John Stewart, who all he did on Monday night, Trump, by the way, again, Herman Cain makes Donald Trump look presidential. Obama probably was sad when Trump dropped out of the presidential race until he met Herman Cain or saw him, you know, and then I thought, no, this
could work.
Better. Trump's mad at John Stewart. Just what he did basically was play some video of Herman Cain doing what Herman Cain does, which is sounding like an idiot. And then made fun of him and lampooned him. And then, I guess, what was Trump most mad about? That did he call him racist?
Oh, he did.
Was a racist?
Absolutely,
rant?
Because of one of the things he was saying, kind of talking like Herman Cain. And frankly, Donald Trump, his worldview on anything should be taken, wrapped, thrown in the garbage.
Yeah.
Donald, shut up.
You know what? Don't even take the time to wrap it. Don't waste your time. The guy's an ass. Donald Trump's a complete and utter ass.
Successful businessman, but that's as far as it goes.
Right, but that doesn't mean that you're qualified to say anything about anything else, particularly when it has to do with politics and good governance. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and he's making an ass of himself again. Are we to say that you can't try to mimic the sound of a man's voice because you're white and he's black? John Stewart constantly, he does Bloomberg. He does Donald Trump. He tries to do these. He
it's
does some
his
mimicry,
job.
And it's kind of funny. So, I mean, are you supposed to because, oh, that guy is a black guy, so I better not try to sound too much like him. I mean, no, that's the, you're doing a caricature of somebody. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter the color of the skin. Is it funny? If it goes beyond, I mean, if he's doing Herman Cain as, you know, again, and we were talking about
step and fetch it.
Shoe polish and, sure. And, you know, blackface, that kind of thing. If it's buckwheat or something like that, then you go, yeah, that's not at all accurate. And so it's probably racist. But here's the other thing is in trying to make somebody of another race look foolish, you could be called a racist if that's what you're trying to do, I suppose. Except that again, the general job description for Jon Stewart on the Daily Show is to make fun of anybody in political circles. Besides which, I don't think Jon Stewart made Herman Cain look any more ridiculous than
he
another guy
does.
Makes Herman Cain look ridiculous, and that's the man himself. That just about wraps it up for another week. But before we go, three quick topics I want to talk about here. I'm just wondering about this person who paid $15,000. An anonymous bidder paid $15,000 for a pair of Queen Victoria's bloomers. And I'm thinking, yeah, I wouldn't want anyone to know who I was either, would you?
No.
Were they game-worn, and what game would that have been? in the late 1800s. Oh. Tim Hortons is introducing espresso. Okay, that's enough. But lasagna, I thought, if that's in a donut form, I'm in. Turns out it's not. They're putting it in a bowl. But now they've introduced something that you can't drink without sticking your pinky out. You're named after Tim Horton, the toughest hombre who ever patrolled the blue line next to Eddie Shore in the history of the NHL.
Hey, he was a Leaf. Hey, come on, hey, it's going to be really big on Woodbridge. Come on, eh?
He wouldn't have stuck his pinky out for anything. And Chris Humphreys, it occurs to me, poor guy, locked out at work, now locked out at home. For Bill Hayes, I'm Don Landry.
And that's the gist of it for another week. The gist of it is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.